Greetings, everybody. This is Adam Cochran, the other guy on Castellini on Computers. This episode is a very special one. You see, 2 weeks ago we recorded a podcast, and then we got busy and didn't get it put up onto the internet. And then we recorded another podcast because all the news and information had changed in the world. So now we have two podcasts and we aren't sure what to do with them, so we decided let's go ahead and post them both in a very special double feature. This is Castellini on Computers episode 18, the double episode. It's a little longer than normal, but please stick around and listen to the whole thing. It is well worth it. One more surprise in this episode, we have introduced the brand new Castellini on Computers intro. Here it goes. Well, this is the weekly podcast where we talk about computers and technology.
We really should think about that, record it, and you could just have it in there.
Just have it in there all the time.
Don't you think? That might be a good
idea. I can record an intro. I can make a new intro.
Let's make a new official intro.
I'll make it sound really powerful.
Over 10 years ago, Rick Castellini and Adam Cochran joined forces on radio to answer people's computer questions, to find solutions to those problems that burdened even the most average human. Today, that mission continues as we answer those questions here on this podcast. This is Castellini on Computers, the podcast.
Yes. So,
well, so that's us. We're at helpmerick.com. We're at talkingdigital.com. We're at Talking Digital and at Help Me Rick on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us lots of places.
Yep.
And Adam, since you brought out your bag,
yes,
I'm going to start out with bags.
Okay, let's talk about bags.
Because I'm feeling a little metrosexual today.
All right.
And I've got my new bag here from Waterfill.
Ooh, what'd you do with your old one?
I still have it.
Oh, okay.
I still have it. But I you know me, I'm a minimalist. I'm always looking for the smallest, most efficient way to carry my gear.
Now, what you have is more of a sleeve there.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a sleeve. They call it a sleeve case.
Of course they do.
That's why it has some D-rings and a little strap.
Oh, look at that.
And it's got this. Now, this is kind of metrosexual.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. I mean, it's okay.
It's a little a detachable bag.
We'll have to post a picture or a link or something up there.
Well, I'm going to plug the company.
Okay.
This is sfbags.com. It's water-filled bags made in San Francisco, completely manufactured in San Francisco. They have some awesome-looking leather bags that I had an extra $250.
Oh, yeah.
I may have done that.
There are some amazing bags out there, but that's cool.
But I wanted something small to carry my MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Something that I could get to quickly that wasn't bulky.
Yep.
And this fit the bill. It does have a little pocket in the back.
Oh, wow.
And it's got this little gear bag here. And everything's detachable.
Right.
So I can stuff the sleeve in my bike bag and take off of my bike with the thing. It's very padded.
Cool.
But anyway, I like the bag, but I love the company. This day and age, we kind of tend, I think, to kind of we've all, I believe, dropped our expectation of what customer service should be.
Right.
And I just think we all are starting, unfortunately, to accept that customer service sucks overall.
Yeah.
And you go into a restaurant, you really can't expect the waiters and waitresses to be really attentive.
Mm-hmm.
You shop online, you expect them not to hear from someone. If you get an email back from someone within 2 weeks, you're excited. These people here at SF Bags, and I tweeted about it and got a lot of feedback from people that have done the shopping with them.
Sure.
These people are attentive, almost overly attentive.
Cool.
I hate to say overly attentive, but they will get back to you within minutes of emails.
Wow.
They give you all the tracking information quickly. They'll customize things. I actually bought a little bigger bag that the sleeve would fit in. But I thought it was going to be pretty tight for the sleeve, but it ended up being a bigger bag than my old one.
Right.
So they said, how do you like it? And I said, well, I said, it's bigger. I thought the sleeve would fit tighter. So they said, well, send it back and we'll just do the sleeve with a flap. See, because the sleeve I bought was without the flap.
Right.
Anyway, so they sent it back. They returned this to me. And I said, great, this is exactly what I'm looking for. I can detach things.
Right.
I can make it as small or as bulky as I need. But I said, the only thing that would make it even better is if I had a little handle.
Right, here, on the top.
On the top, mm-hmm, to make it even more portable. I don't have to always have the shoulder strap.
Right.
And And so I said, if you could sew one of those on the flap.
Yeah.
And they said, well, the flap isn't that sturdy where
right.
we could do that.
Sure.
But we could D-ring a handle. And within 12 hours, they had a prototype that they sent me a picture of the prototype.
Wow.
And they said, now this is rough. This is just a prototype put together, but is this what you're thinking?
Yeah.
I said, it's exactly what I'm thinking. I said, not a lot of slack. I don't want much slack. I want it to fit pretty
right.
tight.
Right.
And they said, well, order something online for $10. And they said, probably like a phone sleeve, or they sell wallets. And
right.
they said, that'll be enough to cover the handle. And so within another 48 hours,
jeez.
They have one on the way. I should get it today.
That is really cool.
And I have this whole thread of emails of the back and forth.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to post it up as a post on my website.
Cool.
Just to show it. And then they're on Twitter. They're responding to customers' feedback
that is
on
so
Twitter.
Cool.
And I haven't been on their Facebook page, but apparently they're very active there as well. But it's really interesting. There was something on their site that says, built in San Francisco, they use for their leather bags. It's all leather that's made and dried and cured here in the United States, or whatever you do to leather.
I forget. Right?
Is it dried and cured?
You do something
stretched,
tan it,
yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
But they said it's expensive to live in San Francisco. It's expensive to work in San Francisco. So our bags aren't the cheapest,
right?
But they are some of. They're very proud of their bags and their
right.
and their service, and they're good.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
Very cool. You know, my wife buys her purses and bags and all of that from a company that's very similar to that, too. I think that it's a good business for people who want to actually work with the customer service.
Right.
I think that that's really, really cool.
Well, as I was researching, one website that I came across that I'd heard peripherally but I haven't been to is the site where you can go post all your arts and crafts and different
Etsy?
Things. Etsy.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't been to it.
Been to Etsy?
I had never been to Etsy.
Oh.
Or something. And I put in MacBook Air bags.
Uh-huh.
Goodness gracious. There must have been 300
yeah.
of all types.
All sorts of weird ones.
Things
yeah.
made out of paper bags.
And yep.
Things made out of gunny sacks.
Yep.
It was very interesting.
Well, now that you've been to Etsy,
uh-huh.
you need to go to Regretsy. Regretsy is the blog kind of
I haven't
like
seen that.
Yeah, it's definitely worth spending some time on Regretsy. It's all Etsy stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's just they find the very best of the Etsy world on Regretsy.com.
And as in best, you mean goofy things.
I'm being totally sarcastic.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really obnoxious the stuff they have on there.
Here's the first thing that came up.
I don't recommend
Fiesta.
It for children under 16.
Oh.
Sometimes they have some weird stuff there.
The
yeah.
first thing up is the Fiesta doorway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's all sorts of stuff in there.
That's funny.
For the most part, it's fine.
Right.
But you do have stuff that you don't want to have to explain to your kids sometimes on there. And it's not like it's obscene. But
medical
it's,
marijuana design boot.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, it's funny.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on there. And like I said, it's maybe 16's too high. 13 or 14 for sure, because they have stuff on there.
I'm going to skip this next thing I just saw.
Okay, because it's PG-13?
It's beyond PG-13.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we are in this.
I'll
couldn't
it.
Remember how bad it was.
Took me a minute to read. To read what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go. Regretsy.
So,
but
yeah.
Anyway,
that's what I'm saying. See, it's stuff you don't want to have to explain to your kids.
Exactly.
And that there's
I don't
several
know if I can explain
like
that.
Yeah.
That's very odd. Anyway, so big, big, big kudos or whatever. I hate kudos, but
a
good thank you for sure to the people at SF Bags. And I'm very happy with my bag. I'm
it
very,
is very
comfortable
cool. you know, it,
with
it,
my manlyhood to know that it
I don't
looks
know how
a little...
To, yeah, I don't know how to say this because there's not... It's very, there's a lot of craftsmanship in there to this bag. I mean, it's they use the cool threads and cool fabric.
So I could have done
stuff.
Leather down here for an extra
right.
$10, but I decided not to do leather.
Yeah, yeah no, you know, it's really cool. Like I said, it's obvious that it's... I got to be careful how I say this because it'll convey the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious that it's made by humans and not machines.
That's right.
And that's that. I mean, in a very cool way.
Right.
Very, very cool way. So
you can tell it's handmade.
Well, see, that's what I'm afraid of.
Right.
I'm afraid of using the handmade word because
people
what we hear
just said
that
about Etsy.
And they think of Regretsy or Etsy, where it's like, oh,
no,
they fold it up. No, this is. I mean, it is obvious.
Quality.
That
you look at the components and everything.
The people who are working on it are craftsmen.
Yes.
They're not.
regretsy people.
So. Exactly. They're not sitting in a sweatshop.
Exactly.
Just pushing
buttons.
It's very
cool. So anyway, yeah, it's very cool. An interesting design and interesting approach, too.
If you don't mind, Adam,
yeah.
I am going to transition.
Yes,
and
go for
I forgot
it.
To do these things
We've
last
We've talked about bags forever. Let's transition.
I know. And you're kind of a bad guy. You like bags.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny that
I do. You know what I've even started doing? People are like, I like your purse. I'm like, thank you. And I give them a history lesson on the purse. That the purse started with men, just so you know.
Oh, interesting.
It was the way men carried their money. And groups carried their money when they traveled. They had a purse.
And they used to have kind of a...
Yeah. It was a bag like they carried over their shoulder. It was their purse.
So when did women start copying us?
And why can't we carry purses? It's a purse. I mean, it goes back to the Bible. They talk about, you know, the apostles going out without purse or script. Well, they weren't carrying women's purses.
They were carrying
their money. Yeah.
They're carrying mascara.
It's like, oh, I have my hairbrush. And
my
I have mirror. Some... I do... One thing I do, I always, when I'm teaching this, you know, backpack journalism and how to do reports on the scene and what all you tools you should carry with you. Uh-huh. I always bring a backpack full of stuff and I pull out my my portable microphone. I pull out my flip cam. I pull out all that stuff. And then at the very end, I tell them, there's one thing you never leave out of your bag. I know you leave out of yours, but that's for a different reason. But you never leave mints out of your bag. I always have mints at all times. Uh-huh. And I think that's because I'm going to be talking to people.
You want to make sure.
You never know where. You want to make
sure. You're going to be close.
Yeah. And you usually, if you're a traveling reporter, you're usually eating in the car. You know, everywhere you go, you're eating something. So never forget the mints. Always put a little mint.
Altoid can.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one thing that men and women both have in common with what they carry in their purses. So.
Okay, now you got me on two different
ideas. Let's go to your transition.
Well, the first idea I had, though, was you talked about teaching.
Yes.
And I had a customer call me yesterday that just purchased an iPad 2.
Okay.
And also a new, I think you said LG.
Okay.
I forgot, didn't matter. A big 3D TV.
Okay.
56-inch 3D TV.
Sure.
And he was wondering how to transmit his photos and his video from his iPad to his TV.
Right.
Can you do it wirelessly? Well,
there's two ways to do it. Yeah.
You can do it with the cable. We know that.
Wireless, he's going to...
Do you have to have the iTV?
Because he doesn't have a Mac, I think he's going to have to.
See, that's what I was telling him. I said, I think wirelessly...
The iTV, if he's bought that much garbage, spending $99 on an iTV on the Apple TV isn't a bad idea.
Well, and you can pay how much for the cable? The little cable to attach it, $30.
A little cable to attach it's $30.
So you're talking just another $70.
Yeah.
To get the iTV.
Yeah. So I'd go to the iTV. I mean,
but there is no other way to wirelessly do it, I don't believe.
I can't picture how it would be, because the TV would have to be equipped with something that reads that AirPlay.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I told him. It's called AirPlay, and I think you got to have some kind of intermediary.
Something that sends it to the TV.
Right.
And
even though the TV had Wi-Fi. Well, his main question was the difference between Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Oh,
because
wow.
He was thinking that anything that was on Wi-Fi, he could connect to with his iPad. So he was hoping to connect to his 2-year-old Kodak printer.
Right.
I said, not going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, I did see, however, that there is a $6 or $8, maybe it's a $10 app that will let you print to most Wi-Fi printers from your iPad.
Cool.
Good. And apparently there's very few printers it doesn't work with.
Well, good.
But but it's $10 and I don't know how well it works.
Yeah.
But, okay, we're getting all kinds of things going here early. As we were talking about the iPad, one of the main articles today on the news tech news page is Apple faces mother of all backlogs with the iPad 2.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Ouch.
We're going to read that more in a minute.
If they get up to $5,000, I might sell mine.
Are they going high right now on eBay?
I know that. Well, I know that if you have a 64 gig AT&T, 64 gig AT&T iPad 2, some of those are going still for well over $1,000.
Really?
And they cost $800 or $900. So it's, you know, it's like $200 more than what they cost. So yeah, you can still make a profit with them.
So it says Apple sold 4.69 million iPads during the first calendar quarter.
I have students. Yeah, my students are ordering them from Apple. Most of them have had to wait maybe two weeks for them to come in.
And now, why are they ordering there versus getting them at...
I don't know. Oh, Best Buy doesn't even carry them. I mean, Best Buy has all the 64 gigs and the 32 gigs usually, all with 3G.
So they're not carrying all models.
Well, they can't get it. Nobody's getting in the lower end models, and they're disappearing as soon as they do get them. So you wait to find it at your Best Buy or something like that. It's going to be a real tough thing. People are ordering it straight.
So shop
Apple
for Christmas now.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Anyway, I'd like to go from a positive tech story on the bag to a little rant, just briefly.
Oh, good.
Help me keep brief.
Okay, I'll try.
On
that's my. I'm best at that.
On Outlook, Microsoft Outlook, and I don't know if you've seen the newest version of Outlook 2010. You've seen 07, I'm sure.
I have. Oh no, I don't have it.
You've seen 2007.
Yeah, I think I have 2010 on this computer over here. I think.
And 2010 is basically 2007, but made even worse.
Oh no, I bought the version with Outlook. I like that you can buy a version without Outlook.
Yes, that's so nice. That's a nice thing.
Right.
But I think the couple things I've run into just this week alone, and I run into things every week, but just this week alone, the first thing is I look at Office 2010 and 2007. I keep thinking to myself as I'm working with it, looking at the interface, thinking who've ever thought in this day and age of things getting more and more, speaking of minimalist, you look at Firefox, the new Firefox, you look at Google Chrome, you look at even the newer Internet Explorer 9, everything is getting slimmer and less bulky, less garbage junking up the screen.
Right.
Who were the brain trust that thought that throwing every possible attribute and option on the screen in front of you while
to
you're
take
working
up an inch and a half across the top.
Yeah. Exactly. Who ever thought that was a good design element?
Right.
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And it's only gotten worse with Office 2010. When you're or Outlook 2010, when you're in that thing, Adam, it looks like it, probably the reason maybe why some of those air traffic controllers are falling asleep because they're trying to make sense of this very busy screen.
Yeah.
And anyway.
So do you go through and turn off Windows so that it looks like the old one?
I leave it alone. I just say, hey, if you're willing to dink around with this, I'm not going to even work with it. But here's the things I ran into. The newest versions of Outlook, and you could do this with the old versions of Outlook, but now it almost forces you to do this. If you have multiple email accounts that you're checking.
Right.
It actually starts by default, creates a PST file, which is the database file for Outlook for every individual account.
Wow.
So your contacts are spread out.
Right.
You can get your calendar screwed up. So then if you delete a PST,
right,
then all of a sudden your contacts can't be accessed.
Right.
It's bizarre. So that's number one. The number two thing is if you're a brand new user at Office 2010 and you're upgrading from 03 or 2007 on another computer, you bring in your PST file, it imports your contacts, does that fine, all your old email. Mm-hmm. But when you go to create an email, by default, when you type in addresses, what would you expect to happen in a normal email program? And it happens in Windows Live Mail. It happens in
Thunderbird. As you type them in, it brings up old email addresses that you typed in before.
That's right. Well, or something out of your address
book. Or your address book.
Yeah,
right.
Bring my address. Yeah. Doesn't do it in Outlook. You have to actually go in. I had to search. I said, what in the heck? There's no option to do that. By default, it waits until you select
until you type
people
in each one.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of threads I found that said if you add everyone to an email.
Right.
And then you Alt K, you Control A and Alt K once they're in the email. That will put all those email addresses in that lookup database. So I've done that and it works. You know, I type it in and it works. But as soon as you shut Outlook off and turn it back on, get back into Outlook.
It has to do it again.
You have to do it again. So I did a little more research. So I wrote an article on this yesterday at helpmerick.com. But I did find on How To Geek. You've been to How To Geek.
Is that Perillo?
No, I don't know who this guy is.
Oh, okay. That's okay. I was trying to picture the logo, but yeah.
But I think you're right. They kind of, it would be the natural inclination to think it's him. But basically what I learned is that there is a file. I'm going to go quickly here to this article. There is this file called, and get this, it's called the outlook.nk2 file.
Ooh.
And it's a hidden file, of course, buried in the app data roaming Microsoft Outlook folder
okay.
of your computer.
Sure, of course it
and
is.
And this NK2 file is where this autocomplete of your addresses gets stored.
Oh.
So, and I didn't know this about 3 weeks ago when I had a client who moved from Outlook to another computer, and he never had an address book. He always used the autocomplete. So over the years, man. He would just type in a couple of names and then yeah. a couple of characters, then his address come up. And I could not figure out at the time, and I did some searching on how to extract that autocomplete data.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you know, you got to use an address book.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get his. But now that I found this article, if you have access to a tool that's referenced in this article from a company called Nearsoft, NIRSOFT, okay. you can actually manipulate this this NK2 file.
Wow.
You can import your addresses into this file, and it'll stay there.
Oh, wow.
And then if you're one of those people that never created an address book and you relied on this autocomplete, it'll also export the addresses out of this. It does the kung fu to get it in and out of that wow. database. But now, tell me, now here's the other
stupid
thing.
Stupid Microsoft.
In Outlook, too, I said, how many people do we know, or does anyone know, I'm saying this rhetorically for people listening,
right.
do you know that have just one device?
Oh, I know.
You know, in the 90s, we did. Most of us had one device. Maybe we had a laptop.
Right.
But usually you were sitting at a desk with one device.
Right.
Outlook was relevant. Outlook was good. It was okay.
Yeah.
But this day and age of most of us accessing our data from a minimum of two devices and oftentimes three or four, a right. desktop, a laptop, a phone, now becoming more and more tablets, and then also wanting to access at other computers, maybe a friend's house, maybe your work computer.
Right.
It's really an irrelevant software for doing email.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my rant of the day, is Outlook.
One of my pet peeves all the way around is companies that try to stay relevant when they're not. I received an email last week from a company called GooSync.
Yes, yes.
Telling me that their free service is going to go away and they're going to start charging. And I thought, who is still using GooSync? Basically, here's what GooSync
right.
is: a program that synchronizes your Palm address book. No, your Palm email. No.
No, you're right.
What is it? Is that right? Palm calendar. That's what it was.
And contacts.
Yeah, your Palm calendar with your Google calendar
right.
and contacts.
Right.
So it synchronized it. And it was really handy when we were doing scheduling.
When you had a Trio.
When you had a Palm device. Yeah, I didn't look to see whether they offer anything for Android or anything else. But now that stuff's all built into every phone, so there's absolutely no need for it. So here's GooSync telling us, we need the money.
There's the phones it supports now.
Oh, wow. Good. Oh, yeah, they're all... Symbian is a big one, it looks like.
Yeah.
So
some candy bars, phones.
Yeah, a lot of Symbian stuff. So
and for those of you that are still sporting your Razor.
Yeah.
That'll be that. And your, what was the other little flip thing that was the texting sensation?
Sidekick.
The Sidekick.
I like the Sidekick.
Yeah, these are some classic phones here. A lot of Nokias, which is Symbian. Wow.
You know, I've thought. Now that I have my iPad, I've thought if they came out with a Sidekick that just worked as a Wi-Fi hotspot, I wouldn't mind switching over to something like a Sidekick. Something's real simple. Lets me do my texting and my email.
Because something like your iPad, you wouldn't necessarily need the smartphone.
I don't surf the web on my phone anymore.
Yeah.
There's no need to do it. I mean, it's okay for checking Facebook or Twitter or something sometimes.
Using the apps.
But even then, I can turn on the text messaging feature if I really want to and just say if anybody sends me a message on Facebook or mentions me in a tweet, send me a text message, and I can work on it just the same. So I think it's interesting that smartphones may gradually become less relevant as tablets start rolling out more.
And as like you said, especially if we can get more ubiquitous hotspot capability with phones and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
If they bring down the cost of putting the 3G in the tablets
right.
themselves or
yeah.
4G as it
yeah.
comes out.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I don't want to get back into the bags too much, but but I my dream bag.
Hey, it'll bring us in a my whole dream new carrier. Demographic.
Yeah, it really will. Our dream carrier. My dream bag, for lack of a better word, carrying device, Scott E. Vest. I still want my Scott E. Vest, man.
You
want
to carry everything in the vest?
I want it in the vest so I don't have to have anything attached to me.
For your iPad, you'd have to have like a little string or something. Yeah. Drop it in the back.
You know, well, that's it. It has a little back pocket.
Right. You can but then you'd have to have some kind of little thing.
Well, you know what I've thought of? I'm going to write Scott Jordan and see if I can get my name put on this idea. He's the guy who runs Scott E. Vest. I want a Scott E. Vest that has some sort of latch or something on it to where you can actually fold it into a bag when you don't want to wear it.
Well, you've seen that. I'm sure you've seen that video where people use a hoodie.
Yeah.
To create a little bag for your laptop.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So that's your kind of thinking that.
That's my kind of thinking, but the mm-hmm. Scott E. Vest has like 28 pockets in it.
Right.
And
right.
so this would fold up to a bag. So
kind of an origami kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of an origami mm-hmm. sort of thing. Fold it in there. And maybe even if you could only access three or four pockets.
Have a handle.
So you can carry it. You could access the big pocket in the back and a couple little side pockets.
Right.
I don't know. I think we could come up with something cool to where it's...
Cause that's not a bad idea
I
at
do,
all.
If I do get one, I'm going to get the one where the sleeves zip off because uh-huh. In the wintertime, I want to be able to wear it with sleeves.
Right.
And then, you know, but it's still... There's going to be times where it's too heavy to
wear. How
about
a removable liner?
No, I won't.
So you could wear it in Alaska.
I'm okay with that. I don't need to stay warm. I'm really not that picky about keeping warm. I just don't want to carry stuff with me in my hands.
And I guess you would want the liner. It's going to add a lot of weight since you've already got all your gear on you.
Right.
Don't they have a Scott E. Vest that has some solar built into it to charge
items? No, they make a jacket. Not Scott E. Vest. They don't make that. Oh, but there is a jacket that has solar panels on the back to charge your
gear.
Cell phone. And I imagine it takes 3 days to charge it with that thing.
If you're walking across the Sahara or something.
Yeah. You know, Death Valley. If you're doing one of those Death Valley trips.
That's right.
Yeah,
you need to keep things charged up.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I want to go to another. I had all these ideas because we haven't spoke for a couple weeks.
I know. That's good.
First of all, I should tell you that I missed you yesterday at the show.
I'm sure. How'd it go?
I just basically talked for the whole hour. I got three or four calls. I had somebody tweet after the show, said I was going to call you and talk tech. I said, why didn't you call?
Yeah,
call.
Really, why didn't you?
But Rover called. Rover called and kept me company for a few
good.
Minutes.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah.
From Las Vegas.
You can always depend on him.
But anyway, one of your tweets caught my eye last week.
Okay.
About the playbook.
Yes.
From RIM. And you made a pretty interesting prediction. You put RIM.
It really wasn't that interesting of a prediction.
Yeah.
I mean,
peripherally, I've not seen any of the
reviews.
Here
we go. Let's go. Yeah.
Explain what the playbook is and what's going on.
The playbook is, first let's go back and explain what BlackBerry is.
Okay.
BlackBerry is a cell phone / texting emailing device.
Started out just strictly as an email
targeted device. At corporate users.
Okay,
so it's very heavily used in areas that are based around the Outlook, like we were talking about before. Right. This Outlook
and server, the exchange server.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the way companies like real estate agencies, legal agencies, stuff like that, the way they get their email within the company. So you can send email back and forth to people within the company mm-hmm. and have it immediate. It's like a combination between texting.
Enterprise email.
Yeah, enterprise email. It works like a combination between texting and emailing, really. I mean, it's so instantaneous. Excuse me. And so...
the famous push.
So email. BlackBerry... Yeah, so BlackBerry became the PMA, PDA, whatever, for...
The de facto standard.
Right, for corporate.
Mobile email.
Right. So when you think of BlackBerry, you think of usually three things. Other than the phone part. You usually think of email. You think of contacts. Mm-hmm. You think of calendar. Right?
Right.
That's what it does.
And synchronization.
The playbook. Okay. Is BlackBerry's answer. Man, I don't know what's going on. The playbook is BlackBerry's answer to the iPad.
Yeah, the competition.
A little bit smaller, 7-inch screen. Looks really nice. I mean, as far as when you see it demoed and everything, you know, it's touch screen and has cameras in it and all the stuff that's nice. It's even a good price point. $499, I think, is the price point. So it's, you know, it looks like a decent device when you see it. You can put apps on it, just like anything else. But straight out of the box, when you turn it on, it's missing three apps. There's three things. I mean, there's lots.
This is true. This is not...
It doesn't do this natively. No.
Okay.
You can download the apps for it and make it do these things if you want. but it's missing the calendar, a contact management system, and the email system.
Okay, no,
it doesn't do that natively.
What was the reasoning they're giving about that?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, once I just read the first day's reviews saying it's missing and there's nothing there, and you know they're working on it. But here's a,
you're working on a product that you're selling exactly. for $700.
BlackBerry's response was, "We will be coming out with those things in the future."
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you have a competition that's running as strong as it is, yeah. that's already a right. year plus ahead of you.
Right.
And then you come out with a product that's more expensive
yeah.
and less functional.
It really should have come out with only the email,
the contact management. If anything else, right.
You know,
if they're going to wait on anything.
If it was going to be scaled back,
right.
skip the digital camera for now and make yeah. it just do email and all that. I mean, it has a beautiful music player and video player. The interface is incredible. I mean, I really like the
look. Did you go play with it yet?
No, I haven't played with it yet. I'm going to, though, because okay. I'm but you know, it just, and I do like this QNX operating system that it runs on, because it mm-hmm. is an old, it's older than Palm, really. I mean, it's just as old as Palm. It's about a 10 or 12 year old operating system. So it's been around a long time.
But those are glaring absences from their yeah, stuff.
Exactly. Wow. Especially when, because QNX can do all those things. There's nothing natively. It handles Flash natively. I mean, it's basically based on Unix. So it'll do all that stuff. It's just that out of the box, the BlackBerry doesn't do those things.
Absolutely. When I read that, I said, what in the world?
Yeah.
But and since then, since I saw your tweet, I saw that there are more and more negative reviews.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I'm seeing here on Twitter that RIM is announcing they've sold 45,000 playbooks opening day.
Okay. I think corporate will take it. It's just how many
that
more,
doesn't mean they like
how
them.
Many more could they have sold if they would have put email into it?
Yeah.
With contact management and calendar.
That's weird. You know?
That's all they do that make it the BlackBerry, a big BlackBerry, and they probably would have done pretty well.
Well, and I've yet to see, Backdell saying Amazon has a tablet coming. And that's been kind of in the thought process.
Well, we've known that there's going to be a color Kindle at some point, and I imagine it's going to be an Android-driven tablet in answer to the color Nook. That makes sense. Yeah. But they are opening up the Nook, too. Did you see that? The updates that are taking place to the Nook, it's not going to go to Honeycomb, the Android 3 mm-hmm. operating system, but it is going to open it up for more apps so you can install Android apps onto it. So
on the Nook.
Onto the Nook color, which cool. makes it very, very appealing.
Very that
makes
attractive.
It that really makes it, for those who don't want to pay for the iPad, mm-hmm. that is a very close second to the iPad. That's it's right. really, really a nice device.
Because a good price point,
$299? $249. Yeah.
That is a good price point.
Yeah.
An Acer unveils their 10.1-inch Iconia Tab, 2.14 pounds, running Windows 7.
I saw that. Now, Acer or Asus, one of those, I get those two mixed up on which is which, but I think it's Asus. Mm-hmm. They're actually working on a tablet that's basically a two-screened laptop.
That's Asus.
Have you seen it?
Yep.
Asus is doing that.
Yep.
To where the keyboard is actually a touch screen, or you can open it up, and it'll be interesting.
Kind of a convertible thing.
One thing I think is coming very, very soon, this is my new prediction for the iPad 3.
Okay.
Which they don't even know if they're going to be able to make before. They aren't even planning on releasing an iPad 3 next year.
Really?
That makes the iPad 2 a good
long-term investment.
Long-term investment, yeah. So
now, part of the reason, real quickly, about why things are kind of delayed, Japan's yep. a big thing,
Japan
right?
Japan is really the Bill Jobs. Steve Jobs. You know, Steve Jobs, if he wants to get it done, he can.
Right.
If the resource is out there, he can do it.
Right.
Japan is the resource, though.
Right.
I mean, he even the stuff that Japan.
So even though it's assembled in China.
Even the stuff Korea puts out, a lot of it is still reliant on Japan technology.
Japan. Yeah.
So you go to Samsung or some of those that are excellent Korean companies that have worked with Apple in the past. And you still run into the point
that the good news about that
chips
is,
are still made in Japan.
Is it's Japan.
Yeah.
They are not going to be as long to get up and
yeah.
running.
Did you see where
as Haiti?
I love the yeah. I love the or Louisiana. But I love that you go through these slideshows. I don't know if you've seen them on the internet. The before and the after. And the after
no.
photos that
no.
they have of Japan.
I haven't seen any of these yet.
So there's like before and it shows the road.
Right.
Right. after, and it shows the road just torn up.
Right.
And then it says after, and it's only been, you know, weeks since the
hurricane. Some of these
started coming up three tsunami. Weeks after the tsunami.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the road is all back, landscaping, you know.
Seriously?
Yeah. And it's like you wouldn't even think they could fix these roads. I mean, they're totally torn in half and everything. And it says, here's the after, you know. I mean, they are getting to work and they're like, I mean, they have pride in their country, and
they're not sitting around waiting.
Not at all. No,
they're getting it done. That's cool. No. That's very cool.
It is kind of cool to see that happen.
Speaking of countries that are an island, I read an interesting article again. I think I have to reference Wired at least once per podcast.
Right.
There was a survey recently by I don't know whom on who is going to be the first country back to the moon.
Okay.
And so the top three countries would be
China.
Yes. They're obvious. They're
us,
obvious.
United States.
And?
Russia, maybe?
And Russia. Uh-huh. Okay. So those were the kind of three that would come to your mind right away.
Yeah.
The fourth one in fourth place was one, and the article said came out of left field, and for me it came out of left
Israel?
Field.
Israel? No.
The Isle of Man.
Really?
The Isle of Man in the North Atlantic there. Apparently it's a country that's had the same government for 1,200 years.
Wow.
It has 0% corporate tax. And they are the home of at least five major aerotech company, aero and space tech companies. Yes,
because I'm looking at moving to an isle.
Isle of Man. I've got it on my home computer to research the Isle of Man.
Is that M-A-N-N?
I don't know if it's one or two.
Okay,
but the people that live there, they call it Manx. M-A-N-X.
That's even better.
Doesn't that sound awesome?
Okay, I'm going to look it up because I'm looking here. Once I graduate, I'm a free agent here. So I need to find out. Maybe they need a whatever it is
I've got to look it up because I thought any country that has 0% corporate tax,
yeah,
they're already thinking ahead of the game.
Right.
Because in this world of I read an article yesterday about the 65,000 to 70,000 pages that are currently in our tax code in the United States. Okay, I have to go on another little tangent.
No, that's okay.
Another rant. It is tax season. This is rant day.
It is tax season.
This was a CBS article, so this isn't any fringe website.
Right, this isn't Winback or one of those, yeah.
But here is there was a lady that was interviewed that was hired in the year 2000 by the Bush administration to be the tax watchdog for us, for the citizens.
Right.
So she started in the year 2000 or 2001, something like that.
Okay.
She now has a staff that watches the IRS of 2,000 people.
And those people are probably making pretty good living.
Exactly. And she's paid by us to go in there and watch the IRS. And and so she said that last year alone, or this last year from April 15th of 2010 till this year, there was over 196. I take that back. There's 196 new pages, but 592 changes in the tax law in just 1 year.
Well, that's
so that's more than two changes to the tax law per day.
Yeah,
and so she said, apparently I'm not doing my job in this interview. And she said, and a lot of people tend to hate the IRS, but I've learned, and again, it took this person 10 years to figure this out. She said, I've learned it's not the IRS, it's the Congress that's making these laws that creates this convoluted mess.
Right.
And, you know, obviously there's been this big hoopla the last few weeks, but not big enough, in my opinion, about GE not paying any corporate tax.
Right.
And all the residuals they got from
that. Does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me a bit. Because it's all legal.
Yeah.
It's legal.
Right.
And I was going to put a little tweet out that says, is there anyone in the United States of America that knows, my challenge would be, is there anyone in the United States that doesn't know someone that doesn't try to game the tax system?
Right.
Right. And I don't think there is.
And even if you're not gaming the tax system, I mean, there are legal openings there, legal deductions, legal all of that. How many people out there are like, you know, I could take those deductions, but I know the government really needs my money, and I know that they're trying, and I really want to help orphans, so I'm going to give them as much money as I possibly can.
I'm sure orphans are big recipients of tax money.
Because that's the best way, the best resource out there for my money. It's not the nonprofits. It's not the Relay for Life. It's not the American Cancer Society. It's the government, because they're going to fix it.
But I don't know how we got on this, but currently the tax code.
Yeah.
And thank goodness for Kindles and Nooks and those kinds of things. Because if I'm going to read the tax code, I'd rather read it digitally.
Right.
Because it's a 50 to 60,000 page document.
Wow. That's a... That
That's just anyway.
Well, that's it. That's 50 Atlas Shrugs right there. You'd have to. Yeah.
Anyway. Well. All right. So, boy, we've got a heck of a start to the show.
Yeah, we went through a lot of different stuff yesterday.
Well, and here,
no, we're good.
I'm not going to read any email this week. I'm going to go on. I'm going to go on a little capitalist rant here, or a little Atlas Shrug thing.
Oh,
no
good.
One is paid this week.
Okay.
For any answers to any questions.
Okay.
So no one's going to get the questions answered, and we have 19. We have one from Sheboygan, one from Vegas.
Sheboygan, wow.
Oh, well, let's see. Vegas is USS Rover. What did he say?
He probably...
Somebody called in on a phone yesterday and asked about Linux and Magic Jack.
Oh, yeah.
And whether or not Wine would work.
What did he say?
Well, he said he's been using Linux with Magic Jack.
Wow. Well, there you go.
So, that was good. But, yeah, we've got stuff from all over. Clifton,
Wyoming. Do you have a lot of Magic Jack people out there that are...
I've only seen a few
I saw a few. And
It works.
Yeah.
Apparently it works and works well. But again, I think landline phones, again, another dead technology.
Right. But what about the people who just want to carry one phone number with them and use a phone up to their ear and
cell phones
like
do that?
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yeah. So,
Now I can fax from my cell phone.
That's crazy, isn't
that
it?
That is so cool.
I haven't checked to see about the iPad yet on that one.
But that I was very excited about that.
What's the name of that app?
It is called... I got to find it now. I think it's under my utilities. Here it is. No, it's not there. Boy, see, that's the one bad thing about... See, that tells you about the interface. I know you had problems a couple weeks ago looking for something on yours. Fax Burner is an app for the iPhone. Let you take a picture with your iPhone and fax it. And it even makes the little fax sound. It's pretty cool.
This thing's detecting my Bluetooth keyboard here instead of my...
Oh, and it's interrupting you?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say something else regarding
fax burner. Oh, there it is. Oh, no.
Is it just iPhone only?
But here's one called Jot Not Fax.
For the iPad?
For both.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well. We'll see.
You have to check that out.
That'd be cool, because it would be really nice to be able to... I know you think the fax is a dead technology.
No, I am... It's
it's a very... The thing is, it is a very specific need.
Right. There's still a group of people out there that have to use it.
Exactly.
Right.
Anybody who deals with actual files.
It's one folders. Of those technologies, like the telephone, because it's based on the telephone, that just works.
Yep.
It works.
It does.
It just kind of keeps hammering along.
Yeah. As much as we've tried to get rid of it, we have tried to go digital. We've tried to create e-faxes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It always comes back to, it's just easier to
fax.
Have a fax machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've tried, tried and tried, and there's
I remember doing home health in the 80s, and there was up in Seattle. So before computers really even were hitting the road hard, and there was one local sandwich shop that was really pummeling the airways that they would now take fax orders. And so I remember this elderly woman that I was helping in her home, she told me one day, she said, "Do you know what a fax is?" And so I had to try to explain to this 90-year-old in the 80s what a fax is.
Right.
And it still is. If you think about it, it still is a cool technology to do what it does.
Absolutely.
And, you know, obviously we've got way more cooler tools, but at the time, it was very innovative, and it still works.
Yeah.
And a testament to its technology is that it's still out there.
Right.
Nothing has replaced it.
It's kind of like the floppy disk, kind of. And even though it's gone now, it still lasted 20 years.
Right.
You know, unchanged.
It was a lasting. So,
there was something else I thought of like that, too, that was still an unchanged technology we're still using, but I don't remember which one it was.
Well, I've done a lot of, I had a lot of just things that kind of came up and things I wanted to talk about with you. What else has come up on your radar the last couple
of weeks? Well, let's see. I got to be honest with you.
You've been knee deep in school stuff. Right. You've been knee deep in school stuff.
And and so I haven't done enough technology reading. I love my Zeit. on my iPad.
I see you tweeting
it. Still the most amazing app out there for reading my news. Now, the one thing I have realized about Zeit on the iPad, it's a great way to find custom news.
Are you using Instapaper? What was the other one?
Flipboard?
Are you using that much at all?
Yeah, I use Flipboard. Flipboard brings in my news from Twitter. So all my Twitter people that talk, Flipboard still has a place, and it's a great way of finding random news, random stories, all of that stuff. Zeit is much more specific. It's about finding news about the topic that you're interested in.
Okay.
However, the one thing about Zeit that I've begun to realize as I've used it is it really pulls in a lot of information from blogs. You know, the articles that people are writing, you're not getting in a lot of CNN.coms and USA stuff like that. Yeah, you're pulling in information. And I imagine that's because they don't want to get sued, or they have been sued, one or the other.
Well, you're right.
But it's pulling in a lot of stuff, which, you know, the stuff that they're saying is relevant, but a lot of it fits into what I would call op-ed. What education needs to change about their this or that, you know, and
it's not about a study that the University of Wisconsin.
But it does pull in the reviews and stuff like that. The stuff that I'm still interested in, because everybody reviews are op-ed basically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it pulls in a lot of stuff that I still find relevant and interesting. People mm-hmm. find tools that, like Help Me Rick. I mean, those types of sites coming through. So there's still a lot of really relevant, really interesting information coming through there, but it's not where I go to find out the day's news and something. It doesn't really help me when I go into technology. It gives me a lot of reviews, but it doesn't give me a lot of actual news of things that are happening. So anyway, so that's one thing I've noticed with Zeit, but it doesn't keep me from using it at all.
Very cool. Yeah, I don't think there's been anything else huge on the horizon come up in the news the last few weeks. One thing I mentioned yesterday on the radio show is it still amazes me as much as we've seen it year in and year out and get even more so the last few years. There's no company around today that can create as much free publicity as Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that is just a phenomenon in itself. And I'll bet there's economic courses out there that are and marketing courses that study that.
Right.
That are saying, you know, this is what they're doing. How are they doing it?
Right.
I see you're having trouble with your iGoogle again.
It's doing something weird.
Is it the computer or is it the iGoogle?
No, it's the computer. That's interesting.
That won't affect our recording, huh?
Nope. No, because we record directly into the hard drive here. So
well, that's right. I forget that that's not that you go into the computer as an afterthought.
Right.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, you know, let's see. We were just talking. Oh, we were talking about Apple making money.
Talking about Apple's publicity.
Yeah, Apple's publicity. Have you seen? There's a video on the web. Look real quick for the golden circle.
The golden. Ooh, that doesn't.
I know it sounds scary.
That sounds scary.
But I think you'll find the right thing.
Okay.
It should be a TED.
Anytime I hear it should be like golden.
It should be like a TED video. You know, my speakers were down, but that's not going to.
That's okay.
That's my internal speakers.
Is it Simon Sinek?
Yeah, that's it. Simon Sinek. Golden Circle, the video. He does this thing. You got to watch it. Really cool.
Is he from Iceland?
He's kind of like. No, no.
There's a popular tourist route in South Iceland.
Oh, yeah. No, this is Simon Sinek. That's the right guy. Which is a cool last
Those
name.
Those who know why. All organizations and careers function on three levels.
Yeah. And he's actually analyzed Apple and all these companies. He's kind of a Seth Godin type guy. So, you know, he's a marketing guy and all of that. But I've learned that some of these marketing guys really know what they're talking about. Yeah, it's really minimalist. Cool. Really cool. But his video on there, he talks about that. He says, you know, how do you get Hewlett Packard and Apple, both of which have all the money, both of which have all the resources, both of which, you know, they all technically are Sony. They should all be doing the same thing. But the difference is that Apple starts with why. Mm-hmm. It's like they say, this is why we want to make beautiful things, basically. That's what we love. We love making people happy and making beautiful things. We just happen to use computers to do it. And that brings us money. It doesn't start with, we want to make money.
He's got why, how, so what.
So he doesn't start out with the what or, you know, the how or whatever. We're going to make money by making computers and people will be happy. He doesn't do it that way. He does it, you know, starts out with center. Like, what do you like to do? You like to make people happy, you know, you're, to do whatever. It, you're going to make computers and all that. So So it's really interesting. And he talks about the Wright brothers. There's a really cool section there. He talks about the Wright brothers and somebody who the government had commissioned to come up with the first airplane. Mm-hmm. And all the work the Wright brothers would do, that they would carry extra stuff with them up the hills to jump off so that when the plane crashed, they'd be able to rebuild the plane in the field and all of it. They had no money. Mm-hmm. They just desperately wanted to do this thing because they loved the idea of being able to fly airplanes. This other guy had all the money behind him, everything. And then what they talked about was as soon as he got that plane, as soon as the Wright brothers got their plane to fly, mm-hmm. the other guy just gave up, just quit. And just because his heart wasn't in it, he didn't really, he was only doing it to satisfy the government to make the money that he needed. And I think it's a really interesting analysis of things. And I think it's fairly accurate. I mean, like I said, there is a lot of, you can always use it as a cop out
for not working
and stuff like that. I haven't read his book yet.
I might have to get that as an ebook.
I did get Seth Godin's Linchpin.
And?
That's very good.
Is it?
It's very good. Now, see, again, I'm not one of these guys who buys into every marketing motivational speaker. You know, I'm not a Tony Robbins guy or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But Seth Godin does have a cool way of looking at things, and he does have a cool way of pointing out things that are obvious right in front of you and showing you why things are the way they are. And a lot of his
books, I always get Seth Godin.
Seth Godin's the bald guy with the glasses.
But I always get him mixed up with the other Seth that's the movie guy.
Oh, he's Seth Rogen.
Rogen.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
Quite different
people. I've mixed those two up before, too. But anyway, it's interesting. The Linchpin book is really cool. It's a good one. I'd say it's a little bit different than the rest of them because it's less. Some of his books borderline the Seth Godin religion mm-hmm. where he, you have these people who follow him around and who are fanboys of Seth Godin, mm-hmm. but this book's pretty interesting. I mean, it's really about,
do you have to read it for school or you just get
it? No, I just found it at Borders and it was on their $2.99 on their last day.
That was
or
a very
whatever.
Sad thing.
Yeah.
Watching that be dismantled.
Did you see the picture I posted of the Borders? It wasn't here. I retweeted it. But somebody posted up a sign mm-hmm. that they found on a Borders that was closing down. Mm-hmm. And it says, restrooms not available, try Amazon.com on their front doors.
Oh. Put a little sour grapes there.
Yeah, no kidding. So that was pretty cool. So.
Although I did notice, and I only went in there once during their closing. And uh-huh. I had to use a restroom. And there were stickers on the restroom, yeah. On all the different implements in the restroom uh-huh. that people had bought.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they literally
everything
sold everything.
Stripped out. Yeah.
Wow.
It was really interesting. But I thought it was funny that I even heard people comment on it because we went in about every other week mm-hmm. while they were closing because we'd buy stuff for school. But they had to get to 40% off mm-hmm. before their books started
selling.
There were some people who saw 20% off, and so they went and bought the book because, heck, it's 20% off.
Right.
I have my little Amazon scanner on my cell phone. And I'd pick it up, scan it, do the math.
Still too high.
Realize that, to buy it on Amazon, it would be $32, and 40% off at Borders was still $36.
Oh, wow.
So it's, something like that. To where,
shows you why it failed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just too high a price, for sure.
Crazy, crazy. Well, Adam, anything else you can think of?
Yeah, I don't have anything else here. Did you?
I can't think of any other rants to go on at the moment. I feel like this is a strong show.
Yeah, I think so too. I'd hate
the people will speak and tell us what they think. But we appreciate people listening. You can find us at helpmerick.com or talkingdigital.com or any of the social networks using those monikers. So thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Remember, this is a two-part episode. This episode's a little older, but still has a lot of great content. And most of the stuff we talk about is timeless anyway. You know how technology is. So stick around. Here it is. We're going to call this 18B, part two of the 18th episode of... Here it goes.
Welcome to the podcast. My name's Rick.
I'm Adam Cochran.
That's Adam. And you can find Adam at talkingdigital.org, on Facebook at Talking Digital, Twitter at Talking Digital... Yep. Tumblr.
I try to be everywhere talking. Yeah, Tumblr.
LinkedIn.
Yep. The one difference is YouTube.
Foursquare.
Yep. The one difference is YouTube.
Buzz.
YouTube is Talking Digital TV.
Orkut.
I don't know if I have Orkut. It sounds too much like okra.
Okra.
Yeah. No, I don't have Orkut.
And you can find me in all those same places.
I do have like Reddit, but I don't use Reddit very often.
Help Me Rick.
It's okay. Oh, yeah. You're at Help Me Rick in all the same places. So.
All the same places.
Good deal.
But we have a $5 question this week that we're going to answer.
$5.
A $5 question. And it's Jane in Carbondale.
Good.
And she has been wondering when I'm going to answer the question. I told her it was going to be on this week's podcast.
Good.
And she thought that just by paying $5, I was going to call her up maybe and lead her through the question.
Answer her question.
Yeah, for $5. So I had to refer her back to the large print on the page where she made the donation.
Right.
But Jane, at least your email is going to get answered, because there's a lot of people that if they don't pay, their emails don't necessarily get answered.
Right.
So here you go. She needs to change the font in her emails. She's using Windows 7. And not just the headings, but the entire email portion. She's using Thunderbird. I don't want the magnifying part. It went from 100 to 200%. I just need maybe a 14 size font. Just a little larger than what the regular print is.
We can do that.
We can do it very easily. And all you have to do is in your Thunderbird, you're going to click Edit and Preferences. And I'm going to look up. I don't have Thunderbird on my computer, but I'm going
to click. It's very similar to Firefox. I know that, the way that you change it. But same with you. I'm not.
Yeah, she's just going to go to Edit and Preferences, and then she's going to click on Composition. The little pencil, and the word says Composition. And in there, you can change the font name, the font size, the font color, anything you want to be the default settings. That's where you're going to do it. And I think Jane also points out something that's very important, and that is you do not want to fool with the zoom when you think you're changing the size of the font,
right?
Because the zoom is only for your viewing. It doesn't mean that's how the other person's going to see it when they get it. So make sure that you are changing it under Edit, Preferences, and Composition, and you will be all set. So there you go, Jane. We appreciate your donation. And since you're the only one that paid this week, your email may be the only one we'll answer.
Yeah, especially in this side of the world. We might decide to go to Africa or China or one.
Well, I got a feeling people are trying to game the system.
They might be. We're not going to answer those anymore.
They know that I like those foreign ones. Although I'm looking through here.
Foreign, you said, right?
Yes,
foreign. Okay, good. You just had a Colorado accent there for a second.
What did it sound like?
It said foreign. Which kind of sounded like porn.
Foreign.
I was worried about that. So.
No, the only foreign one we have today is from Albuquerque and England.
Albuquerque, New Mexico?
Yeah, isn't that a foreign state?
Yeah. I guess it does have Mexico in the.
See, I grew up in New Mexico, and you don't know how many people I meet still to this day.
Right.
That don't realize that New Mexico is a state.
Part of the United States.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, it's serious. I'm serious.
Fantastic.
About that. Isn't that amazing?
That is weird. Wow.
Good job, New Mexico Tourism Board, and good job, American Education.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, you're talking about Richard. Oh, you know what? There was one thing I keep meaning to put in. I've been tagging this at the end of the podcast.
All right.
But it is something that we need to say during the podcast. And that is, if you subscribe to Help Me Rick, or to this podcast, if you subscribe to us,
you can find it
via iTunes or wherever you're doing it from, because we might be listed other places too, Podcatcher or something like that. If you listen to us, if you subscribe to us with your iPod or whatever device, especially on iTunes, go into iTunes and give us as many stars as they'll let you give, like five stars. Write a nice review. Let people know that we've been on forever. Because Rick and I, you know, we've given our 5-star reviews and now we can't give any more. So if we can get other people to give the 5-star reviews too, it might help other people discover the show and know more about it. You can find us at either helpmerick.com or talkingdigital.org. And in both places, there's a way to get to the iTunes subscription place and leave a rating there. So I just want to encourage people to do that.
Very good. And us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook, yeah, if you want. That's okay. You know, the cool thing about liking on the Facebook thing has a very cool, what's that called?
I have no idea.
Analytics sort of section to it, where you can kind of see who's liking you and how often they check your site and all. It's got some cool stuff to it. So what the heck, it doesn't hurt us. That's just my cell phone. That's a text message.
I thought there was a bird in the studio.
No, Rick probably tweeted something right there, and it probably came to my thing. There we go. I'll turn that down. Okay. Yeah, believe it or not, we have been doing this show for quite a while. And
believe it or not,
we got believe it or not,
we are in the Ripley's book for sure.
We've been doing this a long time, and
which is probably why we're so laissez-faire about.
Yeah, the show has come a long way, believe it or not, and so we'll talk about whatever's going on in computers and technology, and we'll answer any questions.
We'll answer dollar and $5 questions.
That's it. Yeah. We even answered a 2-cent question a while back.
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
Not that we're soliciting those, but we did answer a question that somebody paid 2 cents for us to answer one time.
There was another thing that came up in the 10 things you need to know from the Business Insider.
Yeah.
And I didn't read its article, but I did find another article here that's similar. Google's going to finance $100 million worth of original programs for YouTube.
Good.
That's fantastic. Amazing.
I knew YouTube would get into that. One of these days.
Yeah, Google, the pundits didn't know if Google could really turn around such a behemoth like YouTube in terms, and by behemoth, I mean, I forget how many gigabytes of data that get uploaded every hour on YouTube. And to maintain that kind of storage structure and server strain is a very large cost.
Yeah.
And they don't charge anything for the service.
Right.
Except if you're putting up commercial stuff and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And now, but they've, over the years, since they acquired it, what, 4 years ago? Four years ago? They finally started putting ads on it, and they've found ways and are starting to make money off YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so now they're putting $100 million of their money out there to promote original programs of YouTube.
I would like to see, here, this is probably an idea that Google's already thought of, but I wonder why Google hasn't come out with a talent agency. And what they would do is, my idea here is that if they Google had their own talent
trademark
agency,
Adam Cochran.
Yeah, that trademark Adam Cochran. I'll work for you, Google. I'll be happy to do that. If Google created their own talent agencies, then when no talent people become famous on YouTube, they can represent these YouTube sensations. Rebecca Black is a good example of that.
I've seen the name. Who is Rebecca Black?
She's no talent. That's become famous on YouTube. She's she put together a music video that's really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to show you. I'll show you as we go on. It's not interesting on the podcast, but really, really bad video.
Okay.
That's kind of become another internet meme, which means it's something that everybody talks about and kind of becomes
water cooler talk.
Water cooler talk. All that.
So it's become. I want to become meme. Water cooler talk.
So yeah, she's it's really, 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 really bad. And really bad. And it's the song. The video is okay, but the song is just so horrible that it's just become this sensation. But as a result, you know, we get album deals offered and you get appearances on TV and all of those things. And I just think Google should jump in there and say, I'm going to take advantage of your 15 minutes of fame. Well, yeah, you frown.
I agree with you. No, I'm reading the news as I'm listening to you.
What's going on?
But you're right. I mean, if they... And I'm sure that they are, because these people are learning, Adam, that they can do things like the YouTube partnership.
Right.
So the YouTube partnership not only benefits those people that are getting high amount of views,
right.
but of course it also benefits YouTube and Google.
I think you should just have a part of your account when you sign up that says, are you interested in having Google represent you should this video become... you know, an internet sensation, mm-hmm. you can check the little box and say, yes, I'm interested. And that way Google gets first rights to contact you. And because I wouldn't mind having Google be my marketing force.
No,
I'd be all for that.
Not at all. Well, the reason you saw my face there a second ago is I came across another story from, they're quoting a gentleman, a economist, Piper Jeffray. I don't know who he is.
It's an awesome name.
But according to the outfit's 21st biannual survey of 4,500 high school students across the United States, 1 in 5 of them has a tablet.
Oh, cool.
That's, what do you think it's got that much penetration already?
It depends on the city and where he's at.
Well,
I think there's upscale schools where it's probably, you know, 20 or 30%.
Let me find the study. It was a study of 4,500 high school students.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find...
It's not that big where I'm teaching, but where I'm teaching is, there may only be 1 in 5 that actually has a laptop, so... Maybe really? maybe a little more than that. Maybe 50%. But there's a lot of kids that don't have laptops.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That now that surprises me.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can find this actual survey. Although in the same survey, well, this is a survey, same guy. I guess this guy does, he partners with DECA. DECA is the high school business association.
Right.
And in 2007, they said teens are not using, are not spending as much on teen fashion. But I'm trying to find, I'm trying to find this actual survey, but I can't find the actual, if I find it during the show, I'll let you know.
I really think we're on that route though. I mean, we're in that, headed in that direction. Every time I have my iPad somewhere, and you know me, but you know I'm kind of a fanboy now. But
do you really consider yourself a fanboy?
Well, mate, no, I'm not to the point where I could say Apple does no wrong and there's nothing wrong with this. And but at the same time, when I talk to other people and I show them all the stuff that can take place on it,
right?
You know, all the stuff you can do, and of course, I'm showing them a lot more educational things and journalism things because those are the things I'm interested in. Yeah, I don't even have Angry Birds on there.
Seriously,
I might. If I do, it's not because I downloaded it.
Kids get it.
Right? But yeah, I mean, it's I start showing them, and it just opens up people's eyes. I mean, it's just like wow. I got to get one of those. Wow, that's, I mean, it's well, something I was talking, where, I've, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was talking to you about a client that I was at last night, setting up their email.
Yeah.
And their daughter had, this is a teenager.
Yeah.
She's like a 19-year-old teenager, but she's college, has an iPad.
Right.
That they got her for Christmas.
Right.
They were so impressed with it. Yeah. Now mom and dad both bought one.
Yeah. I think it is a his and hers device. I think it's kind of like computers have become, to where you have the his and hers computer because neither one wants the other one messing up their stuff. I think it's very much the same way. I think that even if you're not tech savvy, now that's the thing about computers is you still have to be somewhat, even if it's a little bit, but you still have to be somewhat tech savvy to have his and hers computers. You have to be interested in email. You have to be interested in, you know, doing things online and researching on the internet and using Google and all of that. Otherwise, you don't get very much good use out of a computer. But with the iPad, you know, you hand it to anybody. You ask them what they like to do. You put a couple apps on them or show them how to do it on the iPad, and they're absorbed. I mean, they know how to use it instantly. I mean, you saw I don't know if you saw the story, but there was a story about a guy who got one for his 2-year-old son or daughter. I don't know, 2-year-old kid, and how quickly that 2-year-old took to doing it and was doing stuff like math and reading games and all that stuff. Just, I mean, at 2 years old, I mean, there's something that's intuitive about it. Just the touching aspect,
right?
That it really is. And I read another one about a classroom that was experimenting. They bought enough iPads, or they received some iPads for their school for 2 weeks.
Okay,
in some project, and they called it iPad Week. And each teacher had the iPad in their classroom for 1 day.
Okay,
so they had time to have an orientation on what could happen with it and what you could do with it, and what ideas that students could use it for. And then they tried to implement those ideas into the classroom with these kids, and these were elementary school kids. But they handed them out, and they said that once the kids had them, they didn't even have to control what they were doing on them, because it wasn't like they were going into the games. They only had educational stuff on there, but the kids were putting together their own projects and their own groups and all these things that were much more advanced things that you'd be doing in school. But they were all doing it because they saw their friends doing something on the iPad and they wanted to do the same thing. And they were working on math. They were building things. They were drawing, small architecture things, you know, working with blocks and, you know, all the stuff that you do. But because it was on the iPad, you know, they were much more engaged in it.
Sure.
And they said they even skipped their 15-minute recess that they'd have in the afternoon, that they didn't want to go outside because they were all working on a big math project together. So, cool. I mean, it might just be that you know, newness of it and the interesting, you know, it's interesting and everything, the novelty of it. But at the same time, you know, it is a learning tool. It's very cool.
That's what, and there's a lot. Now, the thing is, what I'm trying to think about now with the iPhone, the iPad, the Androids, is there's so much development going on with apps. What is I still haven't found a great way to quickly narrow down. What are the best apps for math? What are the best apps for reading? What is my best apps for reading news? And I always like to sort through different sites by rating. Yeah. But even going that direction sometimes is, that's still subjective.
You're right.
And you can always search for top math apps for the iPad.
Right.
But then you're going to get 25 different articles or more from different people giving you stuff. Right. And so you try to find the commonality.
Yeah.
But that becomes another big thing is there's so many players in this emerging market that it's hard to sift through what is really truly good and what is truly something you probably shouldn't waste your time
on. Here's an idea for Apple and for any other app developer. I think you should have an internet site where you go to Apple or iTunes or whatever or the Android market on your computer, not on your device, but on your computer. And you take the app and you're able to use the app within a little window that pops for even if you can only do it for 10 minutes.
Well,
and then have it closed down. And
well, that brings me back to the old Palm days where when we downloaded apps for when they called them programs back then, it wasn't an app. They can call it an app.
Right.
But Palm was perfect because we did have things like Palm Gear and stuff like that where you could read reviews. But every single application, whether it was a paid or not, you could download and use it.
It was a trial,
and then it was up for the developer to decide, is it an unlimited trial? Is it a 14-day? Is it just a 7-day?
Like shareware always has been, and that's what we need to have implemented.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't do that, because if it's time-sensitive, there's got to be a way for them to leave like a little cookie,
it's already possible, because it's already possible because you know, things like the daily. You can only use the daily for 30 days, and then it comes up and says, do you want to continue paying? Right. There are those apps out there. I don't know why all apps don't do that.
Well, and then the apps, they are getting smarter, too. Some of the apps that say, well, I'll give it away for free, but I'm going to put advertising in it.
Right.
So then if you really like it, you're going to probably pay to get that advertising off of there.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say, I have to agree with some of the people with the Angry Birds.
Uh-huh.
The newest versions of Angry Birds have advertising in the paid version.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Advertising their own products, their other
right,
products,
but
it's still very irritating.
But
I think that's going to have to be something. If I'm a developer, I want to get it in people's hands, because if I'm confident that my program or my app is going to work, then I'm going to be confident to give it away and let you use it for 14 days and know that you're going to like it so much, you're going to come back and give me a buck for it.
And there are some programs out there that have a light version and a full version.
Right.
But the light but the light version never shows up in the searches. You have to search for the free version in order to find it.
Right.
And so you may not, or the light version, so you may not even know that other one exists.
And if you're searching for it, it's L-I-T-E.
Yeah,
and
L-I-T-E.
It's not L-I-G-H-T. So you got to.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I think it's got to kind of pan out. I agree.
Oh, man. It would change the app store completely if people could do that.
And I think there's probably a heck of a lot of good apps that are buried.
Yep.
That either don't have enough momentum behind them.
Right.
Well, like let's take password managers.
Right.
When I was researching password managers for my iPhone, there are hundreds of password managers. Some of them free, some of them as high as $20. And I'm more than willing to pay for an app if I know it's going to do what I want to do.
Right.
After reading tons of reviews and looking online at the websites and things like that, I finally fell back to SplashTop's Splash ID.
Right.
And the only reason I did that was A, because I tried a few free ones. I did try a few free ones. But I didn't want to pay for apps that I wasn't going to like, even if it was a buck.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pay a buck if I didn't think I was getting a dollar's value out of
it.
So I ended up going to Splash because they've been around since the Palm days and they have support. So I ended up going with a big guy, in other words, because of the name.
Yeah.
And it's not because I didn't think that I thought their product was more superior than others.
Right.
But it had the features I wanted. It had the ability for me to know the company has been around a long time and probably will be around for a while.
Sure. Well, and even Apple and the Android market both come out and say, well, you can request your money back if it's within 24 hours, but how do you do that? You know, nobody knows. There's no button there. When you delete an app, it doesn't give you your money back. You have to go into the market or go into the site and request your money back and get a refund put back onto your account. So it's not easy at all. And, you know, it just makes it so nobody wants to try it unless they know for sure that it's a good app.
Right.
And I don't trust reviews, you know.
Well, that's it. And because we've always heard about, and even as far with Amazon reviews, too. And I love reading reviews.
Right.
But there are thoughts out there that there are people that are going to game the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
and pay people or even their own marketing department.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. In either direction. I mean, you can get the app developer who's gaming the review to get a high review, or the competition that's going out there and giving low reviews. And so you really can't trust them as far as this app crashes my system all the time. And you don't really know 100% that that's true unless every single review of thousands of reviews says that same thing.
Now, I do like on the iPad and the iPhone app store, they do give you a little chart, a little bar chart
that
says this particular application has 1,000 5 stars and 100 4 stars. Yeah. And 0 0 stars.
Right.
So then you can think, okay, overall, this looks like a positive app. That's kind of how I start narrowing things down.
Exactly.
But again, we don't know. Well, in fact, I had one of the apps I use for an alarm. It came up when I set my alarm last night to review it. And I thought I'd reviewed it.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know how it didn't think I didn't review it. Because I clicked on, all right, stop bugging me, because I do like the app.
Uh-huh.
So I went to review, and my review was there. So I don't know why that didn't close the loop.
I don't know. That's probably just a...
Unless it was a new version or something.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know.
Be something like that.
But heck, that might be an app, if you and I were developers, to come up with an app analyzer.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of fun.
Exactly. Well, you know, but again, I still think it goes back to the problem of there not being a time limit or an ability to share it, because...
Well, I like the virtual idea, too.
When you go in there to the virtual idea of just having a window that pops up and be able to play it in the window is good, because that means you don't have to install it on the app, so Apple can't get, or nobody can really get that concerned with the fact that you've installed it on the app and hacked it or whatever. You'd be able to just play it in a virtual version or a screenshot or something that plays it. You know, there's no motion in a lot of these
screenshots. You can see two or three screenshots.
Yeah, and so you just have no way. But if you could just have a little screen recording of what happens or something like that, I mean, there's got to be a way to do it. But the other thing I found is when I search for something, like password managers is a good example, you search for that, there are, of the 100 that come up, there may be as many as 20 or 30 that have no ratings at all.
That's
because
true.
They say they're, and so you don't even know what to do with those.
Right.
And so,
and I might be willing to try them based on the description.
It's a catch 22 because it says, you know, they won't post reviews until it says this item or this app has not received enough reviews yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see a review on it or star rating.
Right.
And then, so you don't download it, so you can't leave another review to crank up the number of reviews.
The system doesn't work perfectly. It doesn't work well.
Yeah.
So I agree. Hey, speaking of iPads and tablets, did you see that this weekend Samsung is going to release their $349 Wi-Fi only version of the Tab?
Excellent.
Now,
excellent.
It's going to be still running 2.2, the Froyo.
Uh-huh.
Which some people say, just because it was built for a phone, doesn't translate very well to the tablet. But I know when I played with the tablet at Verizon, it wasn't bad.
I think it's okay. Yeah.
But they're saying that the 3.0 of Android, which is known as Gingerbread.
Honeycomb.
Is it Honeycomb?
Yeah.
Oh, Gingerbread is 3.3. Which one's
I don't know.
Or 2.3,
well, there's 2.2. Yeah, there is a 2.3, and then there's a 3.0.
Yeah, but you're right. Honeycomb's 3.0.
That's the worst part about Android. You don't know what you're talking about when you're... But newest one is Honeycomb.
Well, I just read what those names mean.
Uh-huh.
And apparently the Android developers, because Android was bought by Google. Android was a standalone... I just learned this yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Android was a standalone company in Massachusetts.
I kind of remember that. Yeah,
About 5 years, 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
And Google gobbled them up and brought them out to California. And the Android developers, for some reason, are big into baked goods.
Yes.
So all of their... And they're doing it kind of like, if you think about it, kind of like Ubuntu, where Ubuntu names it after animals.
Right.
And then they do it in an order, alphabetical order.
Yeah. So
and that's what they're doing with Android.
Froyo, which is the only non-baked good. I mean, honeycomb is an ingredient in baked goods, but...
Well, Froyo had something to do with it. Froyo,
I thought, was the frozen yogurt.
It's right.
Yeah, it's frozen yogurt.
It's frozen yogurt. So it's F for frozen yogurt.
It's still a food, but it's not necessarily a baked good, but something you might find in a bakery. But yeah, there was
so I don't know
Eclair. There was, I forget what, there hasn't been donut.
But see, it's based on Linux, so I guess it all kinds of ties together.
But yeah, I do remember that it was kind of an open source project to kind of create a new mobile a platform, a new mobile operating system. So I do remember that.
But I'm interested to see how the Samsung Tab pans out, because for $349, that's not a bad entry point. But you can get the refurbed older version of the iPad for about the same price.
$429, so maybe a little less than $100 more.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, is it just down to $429? Hasn't gone down below $400?
Well, $429, if you get the first-gen iPad, you can't find the first-gen iPad.
They're completely gone now.
They're very, very difficult to find.
Okay.
Especially in the low 16 gig version.
Right.
You might find a few, and if you do, then they are around $329, but they're getting more difficult to find.
Which makes sense.
Yep.
But anyway, so the Galaxy Tab goes on sale this weekend, and then next weekend is supposedly the BlackBerry Playbook. And the BlackBerry Playbook runs on its own operating system, isn't that right?
Yeah, it's
not WebOS.
No, it's not web. Oh, the BlackBerry. Oh yeah, the BlackBerry Playbook is.
Is it Android?
No, it's QNX. That weird Unix version.
Yeah,
so Linux. Don't call it Unix.
The funny thing is, a lot of people are wondering, is it really going to come out? Because despite the fact that its deadline is coming up next week, there hasn't been a lot of advertising about the Playbook.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's kind of a mystery.
It's kind of scary. And really, RIM is in some big trouble right now. And
they're doing a lot of backpedaling for sure.
Excuse me. Yeah, I think that it's... The iPad hit them so hard, and then the Samsung, which is the next most popular tablet device, is, you know, it's barely in the double digits as far as sales and all of that when you compare it.
Is it in the double digits?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it was like 18% or something like that.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. But even then, you know, it's just not receiving it. And so they're saying, well, now you have the Motorola Zoom, which is about the same price range, and it's, you know, a little bit more, about mid-range iPad level, and it's not selling anything. And so Playbook, how are they going to do it? The Playbook has some amazing features to it and a beautiful interface, but it's still, the reason people go with iPad is because of the apps.
Right.
And there is an interesting article I read that the Playbook will be able to play Android apps.
It will.
It's not an Android operating system.
That's a true thing?
Yeah, it was a true thing, but or at least it's confirmed on their website. You know, when they list their features and it says we'll run stuff apps from the Android store, but you know that if Android apps don't even work on all Android devices, they're certainly not going to work on a tablet, you know, that's not even built on Android. So I wouldn't expect every Android app to work on the device for sure.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Speaking of Android, which is Google. This week, Larry Page took over as the CEO. Again. He was CEO early on in Google's days, and then they had Eric Schmidt for many years. But now he's back in. There's been a lot of articles. I read a few of them. Have you read much on that?
Not a lot. I just knew that he was back in, and I read some of the stuff, the politics behind Eric Schmidt's change in
leadership.
Positions. Yeah.
Well, according to things I've been reading, Larry Page is very much a geek. He's very much a geeky guy, which goes without saying. I mean, he was one that helped develop or did most of the development on PageRank, which I found out in reading one of my articles, Adam, that PageRank, which is Google's way of searching the internet and then ranking the pages, ranking the websites, and using it for their algorithm for search results, the name PageRank is named after him.
After Larry Page?
Did you know that? I didn't know that.
It just doesn't – I mean, it seems like a – double meaning there.
Yeah, it does. Sure. So
yeah, that's cool.
I didn't realize that, but that's according to the article I read yesterday. Sure. That's why it's called PageRank.
I'm willing to believe that, sure.
But anyhow, apparently he's not very social. He doesn't like big groups. He's not going to be somebody who's going to go out like a Bill Gates or a Steve Ballmer and do the opening ceremonies, like what it's called, the keynotes.
Keynotes and things like that.
And they said he's very data-driven. And again, it all makes sense based on who he is and what he's done. So they're wondering, can he be creative enough and have enough of a business mind to continue to lead Google forward?
Yeah.
Some people are saying, yes, he's going to come in and shake things up a little bit. And his goal, in his words, were to try to come in and make Google feel like a startup again. But with nearly 30,000 employees, they're wondering how that's going to work.
So we'll
see what happens. It'll be interesting. I think
Google, as much as any business can feel like a startup after that, Google still feels that way. I mean, I don't know of any other, but Amazon doesn't feel that way. Even Twitter doesn't necessarily feel that way very much, but Google, because of Google Labs and all the stuff that's going in the background and the fact you never know what they're up to. I mean, all of that still gives Google, I think, that startup feel. So maybe he doesn't have that tough a job ahead of him, but I don't know if he is creative enough to pull this off. What I'd hope that he does is puts good people underneath him and uses them to run the company, and he just stands over it and makes sure that there's no political problems or, you know, interior problems within the company.
Hey, you know, another news story I heard on the way in to the podcast this morning.
Yes.
Did you hear that yesterday Armenia, the country of Armenia, the entire country of Armenia was without the internet for more than 8 hours?
Wow.
Did you hear that?
Without any protests.
Without any protests. They had no internet. I bet they did.
Internet for a full day. It wasn't because of protests.
Yeah. And it was traced to a 75-year-old woman living in neighboring Georgia.
Wow.
This 75-year-old woman was out scouring for copper to sell for money.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
And she accidentally sliced through an underground fiber optic cable. And it just happened to be the only cable that was bringing internet
to Armenia.
Into Armenia.
Whoa.
And so they found her and they arrested her, but then they released her because of her age and because of circumstances. They realized she was, you know, she didn't really realize what she was doing. But it was kind of interesting. But a 75-year-old woman took down an entire country's internet.
Wow.
It's a little scary when you think that one cable that a 75-year-old woman can cut would be A, shallow enough for her to get to with a spade, and B, that would be the only avenue of getting – that's one of the beauties I thought of the internet, that if you had one line cut, it would just reroute to another line.
Right. Well, not in Armenia, I guess.
Apparently not in Armenia. Yeah. So that was an interesting story.
That's a little bit scary. I bet the government's a little scared of that. I bet they're saying, you know, we'll put a few more lines in there for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We got to put some – or let's put some PVC around those fiber optics or something.
Yeah. For sure.
Because at least the PVC would be a little harder to dig through than a fiber optic cable. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Quickly, we'll do a couple more emails. Even though we didn't get any more money, let's go to Liberty, Kentucky. Liberty, Kentucky. And this guy is Jason. He says, I know you get a lot of questions about disappearing icons and toolbars, and I know you have quick fixes for them, but I might have a bit of a challenge for you as I've been unable to find the problem myself. About 3 months ago, I was doing disk cleanup and deleting programs from my computer that I really don't need. I didn't delete any Windows programs. I completed the disk clean and then I exited out. My start menu and desktop is all that remains. I can access the majority of my programs through Task Manager, but I can't access disk cleanup or my defragmenter.
Now, does this mean all of her icons are gone from her desktop? Is that what she's saying?
Well, it's a he, Jason.
Oh, he. I'm sorry.
He says, all that remains... Let me read that one part again. I didn't delete any Windows programs. I completely... My start menu on my desktop is all that remains. I can access the majority of my programs through Task Manager. So it's not a lot of information here because he says...
Yeah, because I don't know whether he's seeing icons on his desktop.
Right.
I don't know if that means his quick launch is gone. I don't know if that means his clock is gone.
He says his start menu is there. But I think the easy question... There is an easy answer for you, Jason.
Okay.
I would shut your computer off, turn the computer back on, start punching F8. He's using Windows XP.
Okay.
Just keep punching F8, F8, F8. Get into safe mode.
Okay.
And then go into your accessories. If you have this in safe mode, you should have this. Mm-hmm. If in Windows XP, don't click on your username, click on the administrator's username. That'd be the better place to go. Get into the administrator user, go into start, programs, accessories, system tools, and system restore. We have a tip on how to use system restore at the website at helpmerick.com. And reset your computer back to a few days before you did this massive cleanup. Because something happened, I don't know what, but something happened that caused you to lose your access to some of your programs, and this will restore it. Now, if you can't get in to, if for some reason you can't get into the menus and these aren't running the way you're intending, you can go to Start and Run, or in your Task Manager, File and Run, and type in S-Y-S-T-R-U-I. That is the command for System Restore in Windows. And then that'll bring up System Restore so you can do the same thing. So I think that's what I would do.
Good.
So, yeah, a little bit of a challenge, but I think that'll get you up and running.
Yeah, no, see, he does have a good problem. That's a pretty rough problem
uh-huh.
for us to solve. But I do like the way he starts his email.
Uh-huh.
The one that says, I know you're good at fixing problems.
Mm-hmm.
And this is me talking as him, basically.
Okay.
I know, Rick, that you're good at fixing problems.
Uh-huh.
But I have a tough problem here for you uh-huh. because I wasn't able to fix it. Now, this is the problem. This is one of the most annoying things about being a computer guy
uh-huh.
is that everybody thinks that they should be able to fix the problem.
We've talked about this, yeah.
And they say, well, you know, this is, and then the other thing they say is that he didn't really say. But the other thing that they say a lot is it's a really quick problem. I'm sure you can fix it quickly.
Yeah. I'm sure you can do it over the phone.
You can talk to me
over the phone.
That nobody understands. I mean, really. So what I did the other day is I called my refrigerator repairman because a fuse was out,
uh-huh.
which I knew it was going to involve changing the motherboard or changing the thing.
Uh-huh.
And so I call him and I just say, I'm sorry I couldn't fix my refrigerator. I know this is a really quick problem for you to fix, and so you should be able to walk me through it over the phone on how to fix my refrigerator. I didn't really do that. Nobody would do that. My car is making a sound. I know it's a really quick fix. If you could just walk me through how to fix this noise in my engine, I know it's easy. Going to be easy for you. Come on over, or just walk me through it over the phone. You know, I'm sure it'll just take a couple minutes. That's annoying.
It's very annoying.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's kind of not only annoying, it's kind of an insult.
It is.
And I don't know where people got off the tracks and got off the highway thinking that they do need to know everything about their computers.
That the most complex device in their house should be easy to fix something small. I mean, it is. I guess what it is the symptom is small. You know, to them it seems like a broken vent on their dashboard or, you know, the radio buttons or something like that. To them, that's what it seems like when they're missing an icon like this or,
right.
you know, they're missing something. They think it's simple or their computer starts up and it almost gets there, but then it freezes or it's slow. I mean, to them, it seems like a simple symptom, but just like our bodies, you know, you say, oh, I have a runny nose. That seems like a simple symptom, but it could mean a major infection that could be. And so you never know. You can't say, doctor, I have a runny nose. You know, it's probably something simple. Just walk me through it over the phone. You know, you need to be checked. You need to know how bad the problem really is.
Okay, and speaking of bad problems, potentially bad problems, another big story this week was Epsilon. Remember Epsilon, the big marketing company?
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking of Echelon. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Epsilon, which handles a lot of communication for tons of different large companies, including a lot of financial companies.
Right.
And I just got an email just now from my credit card company saying, as we have communicated over the course of this last week, Epsilon, a marketing vendor that sends emails on our behalf, notified us of an unauthorized outside access.
Yep.
And according to this particular bank here and according to stories that I've read about the hack of Epsilon, they did get a lot of email addresses, but they didn't get any...
No passwords.
No passwords, right. No addresses, no other personal information. Right. But what it does set you up for is
phishing.
Is a lot of phishing. And I heard a new term this week. When I listened to one of these stories, it was, they call it, if you get an email that's from a phishing that is targeted to you because they know that, like, maybe from a hack like this, that you're banking with Wells Fargo. Then they call that spear phishing.
Ooh.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's good.
Have you heard that yet?
Yeah. Still with a PH.
Yeah. But spear phishing.
Oh, that's
interesting. And meaning that they're being targeted at you because they know you're Wells Fargo.
Right.
And then now here's a situation where Epsilon has been in the news, so people are going to be a little more alert. So they're going to get an email that's supposedly from their bank, but it's not.
Right.
And people are going to kind of fall down that rabbit hole for a little while before they realize, oh, I'm in a rabbit hole.
Right.
And unfortunately, the rabbit holes can be pretty darn shallow. And just stepping into that hole and barely getting in can cause enough problems on your computer that you're going to need help.
Yep.
So, yeah, be careful.
Yeah, it's a... be expecting, you know, a lot of emails going around that that are either targeted or not, but they're going to do that, and they're just going to look so legitimate. And what one way to know, I mean, when that it's too late, I guess, mm-hmm. I should say. I mean, hopefully, you know, when you get something from your bank or whatever through your email, don't type in your username and password first thing. No. If anything, call your bank and find out whether it's really legitimate and all of that. But that's what a lot of these services are doing now, is they send you a legitimate looking email, mm-hmm. that just has you log in with your, it says basically type in your username and password to reset your password or to whatever. And that's all they want. Mm-hmm. They don't even want you to fill out the forms and all of that anymore. They just want you to type in your username and password.
After that, and then, they can get everything.
Yeah. And then it'll come up and it'll say, you know, error, or couldn't log in or whatever. And that's it. And then you'll go back and you'll close out and you go to your bank and you log in and you're say, oh, I can get in. There's something wrong that, you know, it's just right. something weird that was happening. And you dismiss it. 2 weeks later, when you don't have any money left, you know, you may not even recall going through that process.
Well, and here's the thing. There's a whole generation of people out there that love to have an up-to-the-second knowledge of what's going on at their bank.
Right.
And so that particular generation loves that aspect of online banking.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, this generation will say to me, I don't like to shop online. I don't like to put my credit card online. But by golly, they will log in to their bank account 2, 3, 4 times a day,
right, right,
to see if they got any interest, to see if that check cleared that they wrote yesterday,
right,
and all those kinds of things. And so that generation is the generation that's going to get bilked, because they are used to logging in,
right,
and they a lot of times they're using passwords that are just absolutely incredibly inefficient and, right, and not secure passwords.
Yep.
But you got to be careful out there. There's so many things that I think we've jumped into this era of online, keeping our lives online. And whether or not you're shopping online, you're shopping online.
Right.
Because exactly. everything that goes through financially happens
when you write a check at the grocery store and they yeah. scan it and hand your check back to you, you have just done an online transaction, right, whether you know it or not.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you can think that you're writing those checks and everything's offline and analog, but it's certainly not. But again, you got to be careful. I think the thing that I've started to adopt for a lot of my clients is that there is no email that is important.
Right.
If you think that it's something that's, because people say, well, I'm afraid I want to open it because I want to see what it is. No, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Curiosity killed the cat.
That's right.
And so if I always say, tell people there are other means of communication that still are available.
Right.
The U.S. mail still is delivering mail.
Yeah.
Telephones still work.
Yeah.
So if it's that important of a communication that you deleted it, maybe one chance out of a million that it was truly an important email, you're going to hear about it in another avenue.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll either send the email again or they'll make a phone call to you.
Here's an example. The other day we were at Smashburger buying some lunch and we went to use our debit card and it said denied.
Uh-huh.
When we went to use our debit card.
Uh-huh.
And so we didn't even have them run it again because I trust the machines. And, you know, it got denied once with a legitimate denial. It's going to get denied again. Can you run it again? So we paid for it with a different card. And then immediately we called the bank.
Okay.
And whoever it was, the credit card bank, debit card company, called them. And we said, you know, our card was just denied, but we can log into our account. We logged in, of course, from our cell phones. We log in and we see that we have several hundred dollars there in that account. So we knew that everything was okay. So we call them up and they said, well, have you been in Ohio today? And we said, no, I haven't been in Ohio today. And they said, did you buy a dollar's worth of stuff at this Walmart? And if, you know, this, it was just all these little transactions, but all day that day, somebody had been using the card across Ohio. And, we think we've got it narrowed down to where we think the card was skimmed or whatever they call that,
I think that's right.
Skimming it, mm-hmm. where they basically run the card through a card reader.
I think that's
the Then they find another credit card that they steal and they put the information on that credit card that they skimmed off of another credit card, because most people don't even look at the names and all of that on the card when they use it. And I'm pretty sure that we got it skimmed at the Borders closing, where Borders is going out of business here in town, and somebody started using it in Ohio. But again, they didn't send us an email. We didn't have to do anything there. It just, when we ran our card, it got denied. We called the company and within a few minutes we had it all worked out and they sent us a new card and, you know, it wasn't any real big deal at all, but it didn't involve email at all. You can take care of it so many different ways.
Very good. I'm glad you got your smash burger though.
Yeah, we did get our smash.
Although I heard that somebody the other day went and got a smash burger, and they said that the fries were very cold and just the quality was not as good as it's been.
I don't know. There's always somebody who has a bad experience. We haven't had any like that.
So it's been, yeah, we had two of our three close down, which I thought was weird. They opened that
menu
anyway.
Did two close?
The Clifton one's closed now too.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on.
Well, I don't know. I think they just went gung ho too fast with it. Yeah,
three was too many for the Valley. Anyway.
Yeah, three's too many. Their prices were a little bit too high for a three hamburger place.
Yeah,
and then we also have the new Cafe Rio, which is stealing a lot of that new restaurant business. And yeah. So yeah,
all right.
But it's still
enough of that hyper local talk.
That's it. We'll move on. Smashburger's awesome though.
I had something else there that came to my mind here for a second ago, and then it came in and skittered out just as fast. But I'm still kind of thinking about that Georgia woman cutting the cord.
Yeah, we need to be careful with that. Richard Branson, we always like to see what Richard Branson doing. He's making a small deep sea submarine. That's his big announcement.
Oh, real quick, Armenia population, though. Population of Armenia is 3.1 million.
Wow.
So that's
a lot of people.
That's a lot of people to be cut off from the internet.
Holy cow.
Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway,
he wants to do a deep sea dive.
Yeah.
Single man, though, right?
Yeah, it's just a small submarine, which is actually, I think that's cool because I mean, they already have some small deep sea submarines, but this one must be something special because
it's supposed to go deeper than the other ones.
Yeah, if Richard Branson does it, then you know it's going to go deeper
Some of the deep sea submarines are robotic.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
He wants to be the first human submarine,
which is incredible. I don't know how it's possible. And what's scary is that at some point you have to put a person in there to test it out. And Richard Branson is very good about testing everything out without people before he does it, like with Spaceship One and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to come a point where he's going to have to sit in a submarine.
Well, they could put in one of those dummies with the all the sensors.
You
in
still
it and
don't
stuff.
Know, though. You know, you well, still you don't
put
know.
All, they put all those sensors and stuff. That,
I guess.
You know, pressure sensors.
Yeah,
and,
see, I understand that, but I just still think.
Well, maybe they'll put an ape like they did in the 40s and 50s.
That would
space.
Work. I mean, I'd go
the
with
chimpanzee.
That. Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah. But,
don't write to us, Peter.
They have to pressurize it so much inside to counteract the outside pressure.
That's a lot of pressure.
And even it out so that humans can survive that without getting bends or whatever.
Speaking of Southwest Airlines.
Oh, yeah.
And pressure. Yeah. That was some scary stuff this week.
Yeah,
absolutely. The peeling of the skin off the top of a 737.
Yeah,
when
the top blows off your airplane. Then or something. Yeah.
That was kind of scary.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it was one out of, thousands of flights that
exactly.
go on every day.
On one of the best airlines that's out there. I mean, Southwest is incredible. So,
to their credit, and that's what happens again. Here, this is our first political, our first political little gesture today.
Uh-huh.
But that's to me what happens in private enterprise. They find a problem and they jump on it. They grounded all the 737s. They immediately got into a setting where they said we got to inspect this particular issue to make sure it doesn't occur on the other planes
because they wanted to do that too.
Well, they know
it wasn't
they need
like,
to
well,
do.
That was just one airplane. We're not going to worry about it. They knew that it would hurt their reputation
That's
if they
right.
didn't do it for their own market and for their own purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right. So hey, that was kind of interesting. But what else you got, Adam? Anything else?
No, I'm pretty much out of things for right now. I don't see much going on. Even the Kinect is starting to fade out of the news, so they better do something cool with it.
Oh, that's the one thing I did want to mention. What the heck is going on with Microsoft? As we look through the news, Microsoft is so far in the back
like where
of the
are
news.
They?
Yeah, where
yeah.
are they?
Yeah.
I mean, Windows 7 came out last year with not a lot of pop and circumstance.
Right.
It has been very well. Overall, it's worked well. Security-wise, it's just as much of a bomb as all
right.
the other versions.
But as far as dependability and look and feel and ease of use and all of that, it's one of the better
works.
Versions of Windows.
Yeah, it works fine. But my gosh, they have just fallen off the blitz. They've
and
fallen
the
off
Kinect,
the map.
I mean, the Kinect was their big thing this year. I mean, they obviously have had a huge success with the Kinect. I'm just wondering if maybe they're happy with where they're at. Maybe they're saying, we got the Kinect, we're doing good things, let's just keep steady. And if we, you know, because if we try something too drastic, you know, let's bring Bob back, or let's, you know, you never know what they're going to do with Microsoft. Maybe they're saying, you know what, this is the first time in our company's history that we don't have some big lemon right in front of us.
That's true. That's a good
maybe
point.
We'll just sail the cool waters and just let that happen and just wait it out.
Yeah, they even released Office 2011 with very little
nothing,
pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
Which, again, to me, 2010 and 2011 are still somewhat lemons.
I agree. Yeah.
And they're antiquated equipment in today's world.
Exactly.
I fixed a Mac for a woman this week, and she had her hard drive crashed on her Mac laptop. So I put a new laptop, a new hard drive in it. And apparently who she bought it from had pre-installed Microsoft Office.
Mm.
So she didn't have that, of course. She didn't have the disk. So she said, what can I do? As we can go buy Microsoft Office for $110, $120, $130, bucks, whatever it is. Or you could go to OpenOffice.
Right.
So she elected for free.
Yeah.
So she elected to download OpenOffice,
right,
put it on there, and she said, wow, this is all I need. This is great.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
And I think to myself, I beat myself against the head, my head against the wall, and I say, anybody that's been listening to us for the last 10 years knows, or anybody that can read our website knows.
And that's if you want an app, you know? I mean, but you go to Zoho or Google Docs or wherever.
Which is, I think, what really is where it's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I do almost exclusively all of my document creation now online.
Right.
Because I don't create enough complex documents that I have to have a full-blown word processor. And if I do, I've been using OpenOffice for quite a long time.
Yep.
And I have Office 2007, or yes, I have 2007. I guess 2010 is the new one, not 11. 2010 is the new version.
I think 2011 is the Mac version, I think.
Oh, could
and
be.
2010 is a, yeah.
But anyway, whatever it is.
Right.
But it's, unless you are truly creating super complex documents, there is no reason for you to have to worry about that.
And, I think we'll see a day where there's specialized online document creators for the type of documents you're wanting to do. For example, if you're writing a research paper and you need APA format, I wouldn't be surprised if you just go online,
log in.
Yeah, it might be there, just an APA word processor or something like that.
So I found this app. I don't know if you've seen this. This is called OmWriter.
Ooh.
And it's just for writers.
Oh.
And it just basically...
I don't like the trees in the background.
Do you like
still,
it?
I don't.
Well, you can do different little wallpapers.
Well, okay. All right.
And I found there was another one I found just the other day. This is for the Mac.
O-M-M. Writer. All one word?
Yep, all one word.
Okay.
And what it is, it's just a minimalist word processing so you can write. And it does have some music. I think I turned off some real soft music.
Is it online? It's a website? Like
no, this is an app.
Oh, it is an app.
I found it in the Mac App Store for Mac OS 10.6 or
whatever. Mac people are crazy.
But I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
And it's a very minimalist word processor.
Sure.
And so that
iPad-ish.
Way it hides out, hides all the toolbars and nothing else. And then I think it exports as either a PDF or a doc.
Yeah.
Or
RTF.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought that's kind of fun. And
that
I just found one yesterday, kind of very similar.
But you know,
line.
There's going to be so many people who are mad that the little trees don't come across in their document when they print
when it. They printed it out. I don't think you can print from there.
Oh, good.
Though.
That's even better.
But again, this is for writers.
Yeah.
I have yet to use it. I just thought it looked cool.
Yeah.
And I actually tried it out for my daughter because she's a writer.
Yeah.
But there was another one yesterday. I just found a similar thing, but it was available for Windows, Linux, and Mac.
Cool.
And I bookmarked it. Maybe I'll try to find it. Well, I don't know. I think you and I could yik-yak and
chit-chat for a long
time.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff.
But
let's save some of it for next week.
All right.
Because next week there will be a lot of good news.
One last thing on Microsoft. I guess the one thing that I keep hearing peripherally, and it's got to be just... To me, it's got to be almost because they feel sorry for Microsoft. But it's about the Windows 7 phone system.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know anyone that's using a Windows phone?
No, I don't.
Phone?
I don't, but I did play with one this week. This is the first time. Now, see, every other OS that's come out, I've tried to find it within the week of release and play with it.
All right.
This, I mean, it's been out, what now, 4 months, 3 months,
it's
or
probably.
Something like
and
that.
And it had huge problems initially. There was some kind of big update
thing
that they needed to
do.
So
I played with it today. I think it's cool. I think it's cool, but and here's the other
thing,
too.
Does it feel like the old Windows?
No, it
doesn't make a
feel
big
anything
difference?
Like Windows. It doesn't feel like Windows at all.
Good. Because remember, the old Windows
that is
phone
one advantage
system was
to
awful.
It, it doesn't feel like Windows, and it doesn't feel like Android.
Good.
You slide the screens top to bottom, and you kind of, you know, it has, everything's real blocky, like when you want to go to your
phone.
I've
seen that.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool, interface. Uh-huh. The apps are just listed in one long row. Okay. So you just spin through the apps and you can make folders and stuff.
So it's kind of like their Zune.
Yeah, it's very much like defunct. A Zune. It is a Zune. I mean, basically, it's a Zune phone. Operating system put with the phone.
Okay.
And that's what it looks like and feels like. So I do like the look and feel of it. And when, as I was playing with it, I thought...
How's the responsiveness?
Oh, really good. Okay. I mean, it was nice and quick.
Good.
The one thing I thought of as I played with it is that, you know, with the iPad, my phone is almost too complicated. Because... You know, there's so much stuff I don't need anymore on my phone
right.
because I have my iPad. When you look at programs like Jews, well, there's one called Pulse. Mm-hmm. It's available for iPhone.
Is that a news one?
It's a news one. It right. helps you find news and information. RSS feeds a lot like Zeit and Flipboard.
Uh-huh.
It works like those, but it's so much junk packed on that tiny screen.
Right.
And now I have this iPad mm-hmm. to where all I really need is an RSS reader on my phone so I can kind of look through news at those moments where I have 2 minutes to sit down and only my phone with me.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I'm starting to realize.
Yeah, I did put Pulse
yeah, in there. I'm starting That's to realize that my phone, I don't need a complicated phone anymore.
You could go back to a flip phone?
Well, I could
Motorola flip.
I could go to a phone that has basic internet,
mm-hmm.
Google Maps, and, you know,
email. Would you want your email still on?
Well, email would still be nice to be able to read it. Like I said, those times where I have 2 minutes.
Very busy.
Yeah. Those times where I have 2 or 3 minutes and I don't have my iPad with me.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things where I'm sitting in the car or other places and I'm just trying to look through stuff on my phone. But if I've got more than 2 or 3 minutes, I've got my iPad with me. And my iPad is always with me now. And
have a 3G iPad.
No.
So are you using when
yeah,
you're
I use
out
the hotspot?
You're like, using the hotspot uh-huh. when you're out and about.
Yeah, and so that's another feature. I think all cell phones should have the hotspot feature, even if they don't do a lot of internet stuff.
And you don't pay extra for the hotspot, though, do you?
No, because jailbroke my phone
because yeah. you rooted. Okay,
right.
But I think in a lot of cases, if you use your phone for a hotspot, it's cheaper to do that
yeah.
than it is to pay for your iPad.
Oh, by far, yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
by far. Because I pay what? $25, I think, for unlimited on mm-hmm. Sprint.
Well, I'm saying even if you do pay for the hotspot service.
Oh, yeah. Even if you pay for the hotspot service, it's on, well, I think it's...
$25-$30.
It is, but you got to remember that's a limited... When you do it on the iPad, it's mm-hmm. limited.
So No. I'm not saying iPad.
Oh, no. When you do it on your phone,
on your
yes.
phone, right. Yeah, $25-$30.
Exactly. It's between... Depending on what service you go. If you use mm-hmm. Verizon, I think it's $40, something like that. But
oh, is it $40 to do
yeah,
hotspot?
Yeah, something like that.
And I think what's going to happen is if, and they'll probably raise the prices, but if they can keep the prices roughly the same for that
right.
as speeds increase on cellular,
right.
it's going to make sense very soon to disconnect yourself from cable or DSL
right.
and use your cell phone or a little MiFi or yeah. something as your internet.
Exactly.
Because yeah. then you can have it at home,
yep.
take it with you.
For the people who just have one computer and all
right.
that. Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
So, yeah, things are a-changing.
There's some big stuff going on. I can see the day where they start throwing 3G access into the plans to where you just get the slower internet mm-hmm. on your cell phone into the plans. And then when you want the 4G radio enabled so that mm-hmm. you can do it as Wi-Fi, that's where you start paying for your internet. I can see that day coming.
WiMAX is still coming.
WiMAX is here.
I haven't talked about WiMAX for a long time.
I've actually had WiMAX a few times, actually.
Here in the Valley?
Yeah.
Is it actually...
It clicks on and off.
Is it getting deployed?
It's getting here, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's... But it's going to be interesting because Verizon is very bullish on getting their
LTE
rolled out. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, off and on, I've got it here. I just turn it on, I don't know, once every couple of weeks.
And you'll
and
see it periodically?
Sometimes I'll get a radio, yeah.
Huh.
Sometimes I get a signal.
All right. Well, Adam, unless you want me to do one more email.
No, I think we should probably wrap it up. Let's save it for next week.
Okay.
If those people want us to answer their email, they can send us a little
dollar or $5
donation
or something like that.
Yep.
All right.
Cool.
Well, perfect. Well, we appreciate you listening, and we'll be back again extremely soon with another podcast from my buddy over there at Talking Digital and myself. Have a great day. Talking Digital.